Welcome to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, in our other studio a little bit south of us, all the way down in the beautiful city of peace, La Paz, Baja California, sir. We have the Grizz, and I believe from Colorado, we have Anders Halvorsen. And Anders, I'm so glad that we could get you on the program. I don't know a lot about the entire United States, but in California, we're having a real problem with people being confused about trout and steelhead. And there's a lot of, I'm sure, well-intentioned people that are causing some problems for the Department of Fish and Game and for our anglers here, disallowing hatchery trout to be introduced into our lakes and streams. So hopefully we can kind of clarify some issues on that. And the name of the book that you got out currently is?
It's called An Entirely Synthetic Fish, How Rainbow Trout Beguiled America and Overran the World.
Well, I don't know if we can remember that exactly, but we know what it's about. Say it one more time.
It's called An Entirely Synthetic Fish, How Rainbow Trout Beguiled America and Overran the World.
Sounds fascinating. Well, why don't we just kind of let you, we might have some questions for you, but you know, covering the topic that we just kind of talked about, why don't you give us an idea about what you found and what your credentials and background is?
Okay, well, I got my PhD in ecology and evolutionary biology, and I studied frogs and aquatic ecosystems. And while I was working on that, one of the things that I really noticed was that all too frequently the debates that you see over the issues that you just described, for example, are framed in terms of in terms of the science. But frequently, what it appeared to me that what was really fueling the conflict was a really deep-seated difference in value systems and how people perceived the world and what role humans had in it. And I really wanted to explore that more. So I wrote this book, and it goes back 150 years to how we really got started spreading rainbow trout around the world and freshwater fisheries management, how we've gotten started with that as a whole, tracing it up to the present day where you've got these real management conundrums like you describe about what role hatcheries and rainbow trout should play today.
Well, the problem appears to be that people believe that there's such a thing as a wild native rainbow trout, and they don't want the genetic pool to be
contaminated.
Okay. Now, can you comment on that?
Well, there is. I mean, there are certain places where we still do have resident rainbow trout that are, I guess it's all a matter, it's all relative, right? There are certain places where you probably do really have some pure wild native rainbow trout. However, like you're probably alluding to, those places are few and far between these days simply because for the past 100 years we have been intensively stocking rainbow trout all around the country and all around the world. So there are a few pockets left, but it's also relative. You know, some may be absolutely pure hatchery stock, some may be a mix of the two.
Well, excuse me for butting it in, but maybe the people can understand it. Like, there's not really a Native American anymore. You know, they're far and few between, and I think we can use that in the same way we say with a trout. We've been putting things in the humans. We've been coming from everywhere. So we're all a mixed up race, and I think that's the same with most of the rainbow trout, if I'm not wrong.
It's actually so this is a very interesting philosophical discussion. You can get into whole questions about what we're actually talking about when we talk about a species. You know, there's
exactly
a thought that a species is really more of a figment of our imagination. So, but that's not to diminish the role that locally adapted stocks, for example, of fish or populations of fish have or can play.
Yeah, exactly.
The concept of species may be far too broad brush and ambiguous to use in this case.
Well, you see, I have a PhD also. Mine is in herpetology. So, you know, I understand exactly what you're talking about. But the ignorance of people, and excuse them, trying not to use a bad word, but they just don't understand that, yes, I mean, I'm from Montana and the Bighorn River and all, you know, those trout did not come from anywhere except a hatchery, and now they are classified as a wild trout. But it doesn't mean that they weren't brought there.
Oh, that's right. The rainbow trout, except for a very small, tiny corner of Montana, all the rainbow trout in Montana are non-native. The same, of course, goes for brown trout.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what the debate is that is going on right now in California, but I know, there is evidence. So getting beyond sort of this philosophical stuff, now I will argue that there is strong evidence that hatchery fish are not as fit in the wild as wild fish. And that's part of the reason people are driven to try to, get wild fish as opposed to hatchery fish.
Well, I think that's right. I think a wild fish is a better fighter because I've fished all over the world. And a stocked stream, the fish aren't as hard to catch. They're not keyed on the hatches like a wild fish is. And I think there's a point there. But if you stop stocking, you're going to lose your fishery completely. And, some of those wild fish, those domestic fish, will actually reproduce, and you'll have wild fish in a generation, no?
Well, they won't be the same. So, first of all, you could do that, and I think that's what people are arguing for, is if you do stop stocking, you do allow these these fish to develop an adaptation to whatever stream it is that they're in. So I guess second of all, all of this discussion, I think we need to be more specific about what examples we're actually talking about, what particular fisheries or strains of fish that we're worried about. If it's steelhead we're talking about, for example, there's a pretty strong, there's a lot of effects that hatcheries have even beyond, you've got less fit fish interbreeding with the more fit fish. So that as a whole is going to keep the population diminished or less able to sustain itself without intensive management. Then on top of that, there's all the effects that hatcheries have sort of sociologically. So if you're spending money on hatcheries, for example, if the department is spending money on hatcheries, that's money that it's not spending on habitat, for example. You also have a situation where you're creating a fishery, a commercial fishery now I'm talking about, for salmon, for example, because people can go, the netters can go out and catch a lot of salmon, and they end up catching most of the salmon or the steelhead that they're catching are hatchery fish, but the few wild ones that did manage to actually spawn in the wild are also getting caught up in that net, and their population as a whole is getting diminished as well. So there's a lot of, and then there's even more subtle effects, for example, on what it does towards us as a society, and this goes back to value systems. There's how do we approach this problem? Like you say, if we stopped stocking today, the number of steelhead or salmon or whatever it would be would drop significantly. Do we want to use this technological fix, or do we want to say, okay, we need to approach this more holistically and see what's causing these issues, why we don't have a sustainable fishery, and what we can do to fix it?
Well, the point that I'm going to make is that if someone wants to go to a stream or a lake, that even if it goes into the ocean, but a stream or a lake just to go out and catch fish, if they don't stock them, the odds of them catching fish are extremely rare. And it kind of changes the whole nature of getting kids out fishing and getting people out on the lake. I don't think we're going to be able to cover this whole discussion in the 10 minutes that we allocated. So I think we're going to have to continue it a little bit more. But just in parting, could you just kind of make a 20-second summarization?
yeah, 20-second summarization of it's very difficult. But I think that it's a very complex topic. It's not all based simply on the science. A lot of it has to do with our value systems as well and what sort of world we want to create, whether that's what sort of fishery we want to create or even beyond that.
Mm-hmm. But the point is, I guess there is no simple answers, and it depends on what direction you're looking at it from.
Absolutely.
Okay. Anders, if you don't mind, we're going to bring you back on sometime in the next month or two to try and cover this some more, because it's a very important subject. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio. Grizz, you stay there. We'll be right back, and we'll be right back with you.
It's time for you to take a real fun adventure. Join a hosted fishing adventure to Alaska or Baja with the staff of Fish Talk Radio. Real Fun Adventures can book you on any adventure you desire. Bring your fishing friends or meet new ones. Fish Talk Radio gets the best deals from our sponsors to give you the best possible price. Real Fun Trips are inclusive, easy, no-worry packages to the most popular fish grounds. Trips start around $600. Go to reelfunadventures.com.
Set on the magnificent Sea of Cortez, the Grand Heritage Resort and Spa at Marina Costa Baja is the first five-star resort in La Paz, Baja South. Overlooking a 250-slip marina and white sand beaches, enjoy two signature restaurants, a world-class destination for fishing or diving. Enjoy five-star elegance in the charming laid-back city of La Paz. Dock your boat and enjoy the Marina Village. Visit on the web at CostaBajaResort.com.
I wish that I was fishing.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in the studio with Karen and Richard in our other studio in La Paz. As we have the Grizz, and up at Lake Shasta, we have Bob that's going to give us a little bit of information about what's going on up there this time of the year. Bob, Happy New Year. And
Happy New Year, Bob.
Happy New Year, and everybody out there.
I suspect that you kind of had a successful season. Now, where you are in Lake Shasta, you don't get on in Redding. You don't get a lot of snow, but apparently it's been a very, very pleasant time of the year for you.
Oh, yeah. It's dry right now. We've got a lot of fishermen out there getting ready for the big bass tournaments that are coming up for the season. Fishing's doing pretty good right now. Camping's not doing too bad either.
We'd like to mention that, you know, people all over across the United States listen to this, and if you want to go up in the mountains and, you know, you're not going to be doing any ice fishing, Lake Shasta is a beautiful, beautiful place, and it's huge, and it's full of water, and it's full of fish.
Right. Well, we've got about 365 miles of shoreline at Shasta, a little over 33 million acre feet of water, and the weather's really good right now for the— they're not calling for any rain or snow. We take care of Lewiston also, and there's no snow over there. And at Lewiston, they've got good trout fishing going on, flies, and actually they're standing out in the river just going to it. So real good fishing right now everywhere.
Okay. Did you get some people up over Christmas coming up?
We had a few. A lot of people went holiday, but a lot of boats on the lake. Not so much on Trinity, but on Shasta, there was a few boaters out there, you know, catching some good size 1 to 2 pounders.
And what about the facilities that you have for people that want to drive up there?
Well, we've got campgrounds ourselves. We have here at Shasta, we have Hers Bay, we have Bailey Cove that's open, and we have Lakeshore East that's open. So, you know, we have yurts that are available up on Lakeshore East for those people that don't want to bring a tent or don't have an RV. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty well set up. Over Trinity, we have Ackerman Campground and Minersville up on Trinity. So we're open for the winter, and we're ready to go.
Well, you know, it sounds kind of funny, but the snowbirds could actually go to Northern California and enjoy the weather.
Right. It's really good weather right now, and everybody's out here enjoying themselves, and we're constantly selling our passes at our launch ramps. We have pretty much all our launch ramps are open right now, so, and they're being used pretty dramatically from the dam all the way up to our Hers Bay launching facility.
You mentioned some bass tournaments coming up, but I know that you've got a lot of trout and a wide range of variety of fish in the lake.
There's about 14 different varieties on Lake Shasta, anything from sturgeon all the way up to, you know, catfish to the bluegill. You know, those are mainly summer fish, but we've got bass tournaments. We've got good trout. We've got good-sized trout in the lake.
Sounds great. How do we get in touch or make a reservation?
You can get a hold of us through ShastaRecreation.gov, or they can call the reservation line, at 1-877-444-6777.
Yeah, well, I'm sure if you Google it, you'll find it. But what's that website again?
It's recreation.gov.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds pretty easy.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
Okay.
And then, if you don't have access to the web, you can get a hold of that phone number, and they'll give you
all the
help they can give
you. Super. Well, it was up there recently, and I greatly enjoy it. I can't wait to get back up there again. Thanks a lot, Bob.
All righty. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Talk later.
All right. Well, we've got some kind of, I wouldn't say it's warm up there, but it's certainly, for this time of the year, it's certainly an easy place to go. But I know a better place. It's even warmer than
that. Hey, I just got a question before we go to where it's warmer.
Okay.
Was that Tinkerbell flying around in there somewhere? I kept hearing little bitty bells.
I thought
it was Tinkerbell.
We thought that was coming from your side.
No. If I had Tinkerbell here, she wouldn't be making those noises.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on down to Cabo San Lucas, one of the finest fisheries, one of the finest marinas, and inside that marina is the world's best fishing fleet, the Picante. And we have the Wolf probably looking out the window at his fleet right now. And let's find out this time of the year if there's anything happening down in Cabo San Lucas.
Well, John, of course, it's the weather here is great. We're in the...
Say hi to me, too.
Well, I'm going to talk to you in a minute.
Oh, okay.
I had a good one for you. The weather is...
Did you hear Tinkerbell?
No, I didn't hear Tinkerbell.
I did.
Okay. Your ears are ringing. Come on, Grizz, give him a chance.
I'm trying.
So the weather's nice and warm, and the fishing's been really good, too. It's like the tuna are still biting. There's been some big tuna. I mean, multiple... Big tuna, you know, over 180 pounds.
My lord, that's great.
And we had our 220 pounder in the other day, caught by a couple of ladies that were out on the boat, and they did it themselves. And it was quite a fish. It was a fatty. It was really good. And they're still catching, of course, they're still catching some marlin. And there's still a few dorado around. You know, who knows what they're doing? And
wow.
The yellowtail is starting to bite. Snapper fishing has been excellent. What else have we got? And grouper.
What, sierras?
Mm-hmm. So it's been good.
The sierras should be in by now, shouldn't they, Mike?
They are. I've heard some stories of some big sierra. We went out the other day. We didn't look for them, but we got some of the other stuff. But I heard about you. You were out swimming with some big critters last week, I heard.
Yeah, I sure was. We were out there swimming with the whale sharks.
And that must have been fun.
It was incredible. Really, it was. I love those guys.
Well, John, you ought to go out there and try that sometime, jumping there.
Well, I haven't jumped in the water with them, but I've seen them, and they are incredible animals. I don't know if they're beautiful or ugly, but, you know, they've got...
That's what the girls say about me.
But, anyway, they've got this huge mouth, and they're very docile, and they don't mind if people come up and, you know, get them in the water and come up and touch them.
That's also what they say about me.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of whales, then, yes, but anyway, but I understand that you did a little surf fishing, and you're able actually to catch some roosters right off the shore down in Cabo.
Caught some roosters off the shore, and also that we got a hammerhead the other day. That was I've never caught a hammerhead before. That was sort of interesting.
Wow, boy, I bet that was fun.
They're an interesting looking fish.
Was it any size to him?
Oh, he's about 3 or 4 feet.
Yeah,
well, that's a nice fish.
That'd be a lot of fun. Well, if someone wants to go down there, apparently you had a bunch of people down there over the holidays. Did people get out fishing?
Yeah, we have during the holidays. We had all the boats going out, and people were coming back real happy because. There's a lot of people eating tuna. I tell you that it still amazes me. That,
yeah.
And we got a couple of guys that seem to be able to find the big tuna.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, you could check out on Bloody Decks. There's some pictures there.
Well, I know the Picante fleet knows how to find a big tuna. I can attest to that. But you know, the point is with Picante and Cabo San Lucas, sometimes it's better than other. Usually, when the water's warm and the weather's hot, you know, you have more success. But as you just verified, you can go down there anytime, and the more days you spend on the water, the more fun you're going to have, the more fish you're going to catch.
Oh, yeah, and the striped marlin fishing is going to keep on getting better.
Okay.
Pretty soon we'll get squid down here, and they'll be Wolf,
give us some contact information. Of course, you can go to fishtalkradio.com and click on the front page where it says Picante Fleet. That's the easy way to do it, but your website is?
PicanteSportFishing.com.
Perfect.
Or you can call us right here at the marina at 714-442-0644, and one of our friendly agents here will be glad to book a trip for you.
Might even be you. Okay, we really appreciate that, Wolf, and we'll let you get back to your looking out at the harbor and watching the girls walk by.
Okay, I'll be down there Monday, Mike.
Okay, I'll see you then.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, well, we've gone down to the warmer water in Baja. Let's kind of go across into the Atlantic Ocean, and we have Mark Stevens Lloyd from Florida, who is one of the finest jewelers in the world when it comes to the sport of fishing. And Mark, if you could just, first of all, we want to get a little bit of a fishing report from Florida, but give us an idea what you do as your day job.
Hello, John.
I'm here too, Mark.
Hey, Grizz, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing good, buddy.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, you too. I got your beautiful bracelet on right now looking at it. You do such great work.
Well, you're a huge fan of mine, too. Thanks, Grizz.
You're welcome.
John, I'm a jewelry designer here in South Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I started my company in 1989 and grew up with a talented family of jewelers. And just being raised on the water and fishing and diving in early years, I just really took a liking to creating sport fishing jewelry. And so now being in business for 22 years, I've made an occupation out of it, and I have a showroom located in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I also have a nice website if anyone's interested in looking and just taking a look and see what I do. It's vanmarkjewelry.com, and we work basically in 14-karat gold, 18-karat gold, and sterling silver with assorted gemstones.
Well, Mark, I know that you cover a lot of tournaments, and your work is well known. Unfortunately, you know, we've only got about 30 seconds left, and we got a hard break. But if someone wants to get more interested in what you've got, it's Vanmark Jewelry, and your website is?
VanmarkJewelry.com.
Well, that's a difficult one, isn't it? But anyway, but no, your passion certainly comes through, and what you do is absolutely incredible. And we're going to bring you back again and talk more about it. And maybe you can talk a little bit about how you do these things and how you visualize these. Yeah, Grizz, if you don't mind sticking around, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. Mark, we appreciate having you on, and we'll have you back real soon. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan, and we got the Grizz down south. We'll be right back with you.
Considered the finest long-range sport fishing vessel in the world, the Royal Polaris is based at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego. Fishing the Royal Polaris provides unmatched service, speed, and comfort. Live the dream of landing giant yellowfin tuna, wahoo, and summer albacore. Still the fastest long-range sport fisher in the world at 113 feet, the Royal Polaris offers first-class staterooms, refrigerated fish storage, the latest in electronic fish-finding gear, and unmatched expertise. Live your dream for less money than expected. Visit RoyalPolaris.com.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAJA.
The boss is looking for me. He says it's time to go to work, but I am out on the sea. Please leave your message for me. Gone.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, and we have Mike, the Grizz, coming at us from La Paz. Grizz, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to start off with Mark Lassane, who is the editor of Bass Angler Magazine, and then we'll talk to him for a couple minutes, and we're going to bring in Daniel Kim from Dimiki Fishing Products. So, and I think the three of you are probably much all going to be talking about bass. So let's start off with Mark. And Mark, why don't you introduce yourself real quick?
Hello, yeah, Mark Lassane with Bass Angler Magazine. Also a pro bass angler fishing the FLW series out here on the West Coast.
Okay. Well, Grizz, you know, apparently Grizz thinks he can fish for and hunt for anything, but bass is certainly one of his passions. And I know that you guys have talked a lot, so I'm not sure exactly where we're going, but I'm just going to turn it over to you two.
Well, it'd be a good thing, John. You just bow out and let Mark and I take it over. What do you think about that, Mark?
Yeah, we'll just have a good time and, you know, talk some fishing. So
yeah, we'll talk fishing. You just sit there and listen, John. When we might learn something. Well, what's happening up there with you right now, Mark?
Oh, you know, I've been spending a little time up at Lake Shasta. It's, you know, that's been a really tough fishery for, you know, it's a spotted bass lake. But, you know, usually it's really good this time of year, but I'm really not sure what's going on. So it's been a little tough. We've been only catching like a couple fish a day.
That's not saying too much. Well, you know, Mark, I'm headed out in 2 weeks. I'm going to Martell's. And they say they're pulling 14, 15-pound fish out of there, you know, at least one or two a week right now.
Yeah, I think those would be eating the little spotted bass I'm catching up here at Shasta.
Yeah, I'm headed up here not for too long, and I'll be up there 7 days. I think it's going to be some good fishing up there. Pre-spawn is what they say. I'm going after the world record this time, Mark.
Nice, nice. I'm jealous, man. I wish I was going up there.
Well, come on down. You can go. We'll
let
John come along.
Oh, nice, nice. John's paying, I imagine.
Yeah, well, he's the only one that's got any money.
Hey, Mark and Grizz, I know we're having a good time, and let's make it even a bigger party. We have Daniel Kim on the line that wants to join in, and maybe you guys can all talk about some bass and the different methods you can use to catch them, because Daniel Kim at Damiki has got everything that you need. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you guys?
How you doing, Daniel?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Daniel.
How you doing, buddy? Well, tell us about some of the new things you got coming out this year.
You know what? This year we already have our air crawls out. We also have our Hydra Evolutions out. All of our new stuff that we're working on right now, I can't reveal it just until 2013.
Hey, you mean like top secret?
Yeah, for now it's going to be top secret. But wait until ICAST and pass about June, July, and then it'll start coming out.
So you guys are saying that you really got something special this year that's just going to really catch some big fish.
I hope so. I think likewise for any company, you know, everyone wants to get that big one. So
I'm going to get it this time. I'm going to get it here in about 2 weeks. I'm going to get a 25-pound largemouth. What do you think about that, guys?
That might get you a cover shot if you get a 25-pounder.
Oh, really? I get a cover shot? And what do I get from you, Danielle?
You get, let me think about that one.
If you $1 million or something if I catch it on one of your fancy lures?
Oh, maybe I'll give you a couple lures as well.
You know, Damiki.com is a really great website, and they have a lot of nice products. You know, they have an air craw, which is a crawfish bait, and it has air in the craw, so the claws stand up real nice.
Yes, they do. I mean, it'll be a great flipping. I mean, especially when bedding season comes around, it's going to be another killer bait, just like our Hydras.
Daniel, why don't you give us a little bit of an idea? I know that you guys you cover the world, literally. Give us a little bit of an idea about where your products are sold and what kind of stuff that you have.
Okay, well, you know what? Our main offices are in Korea, Japan. We have another branch in Australia and China, and we've been in the market in the U.S. for about 3 years now. We sell everywhere around the world, especially our biggest market being Japan and Korea right now. We're slowly getting into the European market as well. Our product line is pretty much everything except the reel. We have your jerk baits, your crank baits, all your soft plastic that you need. Working on some stuff that we're coming out this year, like I said, I can't really reveal yet. But everything that you need is there.
Right. Daniel, I'm kind of curious. You do sell worldwide. Is it pretty much the same product as some lures? Do they work universal, or is it made specific for certain countries or certain areas?
You know, our baits are pretty much universal. There's some baits in Korea that we didn't bring into the U.S. market yet, but most of it is pretty universal. It's just the color patterns are all the difference.
Is that because of the fish or because of the fishermen?
I think, you know what, everyone has their own type of colors. They're comfortable with the colors they've been using, and U.S. colors is a little different than the colors in Asia. So I think it's color-wise and both fishermen and the color-wise.
Well, I am kind of, it's interesting to hear that you actually do have similar fishing and bass fishing and some of the same stuff that we do in countries like, Korea and Japan. Is, you know, they've been subsistence fishing there for centuries and centuries. And how big is sport fishing there?
Sport fishing is huge over there. I mean, on the weekends, they go out on party boats as well. But then on the weekends, if you look at any point anywhere, you go out, you'll see a fisherman there. You know, it's a big sport. In Japan, it's also, this bass industry has been such a big hit for Japanese people now and Korean people, you know, that it's like, it's worldwide. Everything that we do here, they'll see over there. Everything that they do over there is likewise over here. Anything that we see, hits over in Japan, we want it here.
Well,
likewise,
do they have areas or lakes and streams that are open to the public, or is it private property, or how does that work?
You know, Japan, I'm not too sure about, but in Korea, I know there's public lakes that anyone could go.
Now, are they, because you hear so much about the Asian people, Japanese especially, if a fish hits the land, it's on a plate. Do they practice catch and release, or have you heard about that over there?
You know what? It's highly catch and release for bass over there because now it's a sport, just like how it is over here.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so it's highly emphasized that catch and release is a big thing over there.
That's absolutely great because I'm 100% catch and release on bass. I just think that's wonderful. And billfish.
Mark, in Bass Angler Magazine, do you ever cover anything outside the United States?
Mexico.
Yeah, we do. Actually, we're working on a KDM article. That's a Korean domestic market article. We've done some JD ones. We've done JDM ones, which is Japanese. We work on a lot of the baits that come from over there and a few destination articles outside of the United States, also in Mexico, and a few in Canada. So we cover a lot of places, especially if it's somewhere that a bass angler may want to travel to go and catch some fish.
Daniel, I'm also curious as far as especially like bass angling. You have to figure out what works. Do you do research and do you find that most of the new products are derived from fishing in the United States and go to the Near East, or is it just the opposite?
You know what? I think it just varies on everything. I mean, we have our own product here. I mean, we send it. We have field testers all over, so it's just not information from the West, but it's also information from the East, and we all combine that together and then come out with a basic solution. Okay, this is this color or this product will work worldwide. This product will work all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we come up with our bases.
Well, I think Mark and Grizz will agree that a lot of the lures that were designed for freshwater bass actually work in salt water.
They do.
You know, I think a lot of the lures will work almost, you know, on any kind of game fish in any circumstance.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, fish, you take a Dorado, he'll eat anything. But the only difference is not the shape of the lure or how the action works. It's the strength of the hooks that matters more than anything.
Sure.
Yeah, that's definitely. You know, I've caught countless bass, spotted bay bass, calico bass on crankbaits, you know, using spinner baits, rip baits. Even on worms, too, you know, it varies, especially with all the jerk sheds that's going out right now. I've even thrown on an armor shed, which is our jerk shed, and caught a lot of bass on it. I even caught, I've caught albacore on it. I've caught tuna on it. So, you know what? Whatever you use a bass, you could also bring it out into salt water.
Well, it's interesting that the world is getting smaller and smaller. Daniel, why don't you give us just a quick overview? We've only got less than a minute about your company and how to get in touch with you and what kind of products that you manufacture.
Once again, my name is Daniel from Dimiki. You can reach me at daniel@damiki.com or look me up on damiki.com. We have everything that you like. We have your soft plastics. We have your hooks, your weights. We have your hard baits and your jigs as well. So just take a look up on our website and see what you see, and just give me a call, and maybe we could work something out.
Cool. Now, that's Damiki, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, damiki.com, Damiki. And I went to that website, and I had no idea, you know, how big you guys are and universal you are. So it's very, very interesting. And, of course, when you go there, I'm sure you can find out how to get in touch with some of this stuff. But fascinating that, you know, the world of fishing is getting smaller and smaller.
Definitely.
Well, we're going to let you guys go. We've got coming up to the end of this segment. You are listening to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan and hosting with the Grizz. And we, Mark at Bass Angler, and thank you, Daniel. We'll be back. Let's go.